Hey folks, this is the Contextual Insurgent Podcast, and I'm your host, Aaron Smith. I'm an activist, an analyst, a writer, and a sensemaker. I'm a Republican, a former SFGOP Central Committee Delegate, where I was the Deputy Vice Chair of Communications. As California GOP-endorsed State Senate candidate, where I managed to win 11% of the vote in San Francisco, which, trust me, is better than average. I've also been involved with the firearms community and Second Amendment rights. I was on the cover of Time magazine in November of 2018 for their Guns in America issue. But I'm probably best known for my free speech activism and facing off with hard lefties like Antifa in California and the Pacific Northwest since 2017. The general topic of this podcast series will be politics in the current culture war, as seen from my unique, rather hands-on experience and knowledge, but also intend to include a practical element focused on giving you the conceptual tools to build towards true grassroots, nonviolent political change. You may have noticed lefties usually seem to get what they want regardless of how elections go, and I want to help you change that. You can also sign up for my Substack newsletter at contextualinsurgent.substack.com. I have a weekly newsletter that looks back at some of the highlighted stories of the week and gives you some feedback and analysis of what's happening. If you'd like to support my work, I have a Patreon at patreon.com/EESmith4. That's the number 4. I also have a Cash App at $EESmith4. Again, that's the number 4. For the cost of a mocha frappuccino once a month, you can support my work, which is ultimately about helping you. Hey everyone, I hope you're well. This is, March 3rd now? This is Daily Dispatch number 12. I want to talk about some of the things that I learned this weekend at a training class I had. It was, I guess, technically a shooting class, although shooting was only part of the class. But there's some lessons that I learned that kind of reinforce many of the things I've talked about activism in this podcast. There's been a disconnect between a lot of the things that I see people in the self-defense community talk about and some very obvious principles that I don't think people have realized how much they scale up to other things, whether it's activism or politics or whatever else. I'll get into that, but first I want to talk about basically my experience. This past Saturday and Sunday, I had a 20-hour course with John Murphy of FPF Training on concealed carry, street encounter, skills, and tactics. There was also some homework before the class. That was definitely a change. I've never quite had that before. He has a couple hours of videos of lecture series that you're supposed to watch before you go to the class. And he expounds on a lot of the topics and themes that are covered in the video. But the video by themselves is a pretty good introduction. And he kind of gets to reinforce that in the class during the lecture portion of the class. It's a really good training class. It was a holistic self-defense course that, of course, it did involve shooting, but we didn't even shoot until the second day. The first day was, like I said, it was more than just shooting. There was about 250 round count course. All the shooting and range time was on the second day. It also involves stuff like pre-assault indicators, managing unknown contacts, which is a different type of skill, like how to spot criminal actors on the street, like how to use pepper spray, how to actually put pepper spray in your pocket, how to deploy it, when you should deploy it, how you can challenge and avoid these sorts of incidents. It was really good. There was also a first aid portion of the course, and it came with some medical kits, and we spent several times during the class, we would, deploy different stuff, whether a tourniquet or an Israeli bandage. And, the class would, as a group, you would be told last minute, okay, yeah, left arm, you're bleeding, you're squirting, oxygenated blood. What are you going to do? And then people, say tourniquet, or you tell you put a tourniquet on this limb and you have to deploy it and start counting down the time. So it was a little bit of a pressure time component to it. But it was really good, and I think it was something that more people need, especially if they're self-defense-minded at all. I've got a little over 500 hours of formal training at this point, and I've gotten a pretty wide array of stuff from your conventional handgun and rifle and shotgun stuff to shoot house and vehicle assaults and precision rifles and, you know, guerrilla, like urban sniping stuff. I've got a pretty broad array of training, lots of different topics. And this was a really different and interesting one. And, you know, it's something I think a lot more people need. I highly recommend it. The thing about it is, you know, especially like there's three different levels of training that you're going to get. You're going to get classes that are like skills, and then you're going to get procedures. You're going to get skills, techniques, and procedures is the script that I've heard. You know, you have your basic skills like shooting or precision rifle or pistol or maybe like explosive breaching or something like that. Then you have like your techniques class, which are like shoot house and stuff like that. Then you move up to stuff like procedures, which is more like SWAT training, like SWAT school and stuff like that. So there's different layers and different levels of complexity where you combine each, as you build like the pyramid, what you do is you combine the lessons, the lower level lessons, like you put together several different skills and you create a technique, put together a couple different techniques and you have a procedure. And we get, to me, so many people get stuck at the skills level, especially with shooting. You know, you're on a square range, you're taught, you know, to shoot a target, you're taught when to shoot it, you're taught, you know, usually told how many type of rounds you're going to shoot and what order. And, but that's, there's more to that than self-defense. I mean, really, presumably the reason most people, if you're going to take a handgun class, is some portion of it is you're thinking about using that weapon for self-defense. Well, what you learn, like the shooting itself, it may still put you at a disadvantage. I mean, you want to know more than, you know, I mean, being able to shoot great is awesome. But if you can spot a criminal actor coming and you know how to, you know, avoid that person or defuse that situation, or if you can't, you're prepared for when the confrontation happens. You know, or you can also, how do you deal with like emotionally disturbed homeless people, which if you've ever been in a city, like especially if you've ever been someplace like San Francisco, or especially a lot of blue cities these days, you're going to need to know how to do that. I mean, you can't just shoot homeless people that scream at you. You know, there's things that you're going to have to do, like pepper spray is a great option. And you need something between, you know, as the legendary lawman Chuck Haggard says, you need something between a harsh word and a gun. And that's really what this class was about, you know, giving you a spectrum of options between lethal force and just speaking very harshly, or necessarily even like, if you do speak harshly, how to speak harshly, when to speak harshly, and how to judge, you know, the levels between that. Like maybe you need to draw, maybe there's times where it's appropriate to draw a weapon without actually discharging it. How do you deal with that sort of stuff? But it was a really great discussion of all these topics. You know, you have things like criminal actors will do things like there's very specific, like there's pre-assault indicators like grooming cues, and there's like changes in direction, like how they actually spread out, and you know, like there's a certain like a glance looking for like a witness glance, like you'll see these stuff happening. We watched a bunch of different videos, and after a couple of them, a lot of it was stuff I was fairly familiar with, but it was not stuff that I'd ever actually had a chance to put together in a formal classroom environment and start experimenting with it. So it was really cool to do that, you know, and sit down with a bunch of other people and watch the same videos and a bunch of different videos I'd never seen before. And after a while, it just becomes incredibly obvious what's going to happen, who's going to do it. You just start to spot it immediately. So we had a good discussion on that, some good training. Like, yeah, it's like if someone's approaching you, you know, there's things that people will do, different types of interview techniques when they're like, they're trying to get close to you to victimize you, they may say or do certain things and you want to respond to that. Like, how do you, like, I've heard it called a shark bump before. And if you think back to it, you've probably had a couple of them in your life. If you've been in any sketchy areas, you know, the whole cigarette thing, or, hey, can I ask you a question? All these other little things that happen, you know, and it's called a shark bump. or that's in some areas of the internet and training community, I've heard it called a shark bump. For me, it's very evocative because sharks in real life, you know, they bump. They don't like eating people generally because people aren't fat enough for them, or at least most people aren't. Like sharks like to eat like seals and other creatures that have a lot of blubber because fat has a lot of calories for them, and that's why sharks. So many people that are bitten by sharks, it's just a bite and they let go, and you know, or maybe they'll take a limb or whatever, but they don't come back for more because when a shark like rubs his nose on you or chomps on you, like he can instantly tell the sensors they have in their mouth, all the organs they have, they can tell like, okay, there's not enough fat here. This isn't worth eating because it won't the amount of calories they burn digesting is not worth it for the payoff. So anyway, it's called a shark bump, and for pretty much the same reason. It's like these criminal people will bump into you on the street, or they will try to engage with you, and they're trying to judge whether or not you're a good target to be victimized. And we ran through a lot of different stuff on here, like again, how to spot that sort of thing, how to respond to it, how to use pepper spray, when to use pepper spray, when to switch to a firearm from pepper spray, and we had lots of good role-playing in cases. We had inert pepper spray trainers from Palm, which are really cool because you it's actually tricky kind of tricky deploying pepper spray. People just tend to hose people down with it, and it actually doesn't work because pepper spray has to kind of evaporate a little bit to be functional. Like in the sense you have to spray someone for about 1 second, and then once you pepper spray really doesn't start working really well until you stop spraying it. Because that the liquid is going to start spreading and evaporating, and that vapor is what's really going to start rubbing it in. So if you're just hosing someone down, you're washing off the substance before it has the OC, before it has a chance to really start burning. So yeah, give it like a 1 second spray and let it cook for a bit, and you're gonna have about 4 or 5 seconds before it really starts affecting someone. So yeah, it was just really good at getting a good chance. I mean, there's some stuff that I knew intellectually, but getting to sit in a classroom environment, talk about it in detail, and then go on the range and then work out these tactics and practice them was a really great experience. And a lot of us too, we had these we would be faced with little scenarios individually, and we had to respond to that. And they were different, you know. And John's really good about this. He would talk to people. Or the ones that he didn't know, and then like if he knew you, of course he'd have some ideas on what to do. Like he would try to contextualize it for your personal, like what normally may happen to you. You know, if you have a job that puts you in certain situations, or if you're someone who's targeted because you have a little bit of celebrity, he works off of that. So you get a good bunch of training, and it's very, you know, it's put together in a way that you get an understanding, like, okay, you know, I can't quite shoot this person. This isn't a shooting problem. This is a self-defense situation I need to be concerned about. I need to handle this, but I'm not at a stage where I need to shoot this person. It's not legally justified. It's not morally justified. But how do I handle the situation so it doesn't spiral out of control? So that's what you get trained on. Super great class. And, you know, he also dealt with like dealing with law enforcement. There's a lot of talk about people talk about don't talk to cops at all, and it's generally not good advice. I mean, it's adequate advice. It's better than running your mouth, saying a bunch of crazy shit to the cops after you shoot someone. You don't want to do that. If that's all you can do, it's best to say nothing. But ideally, you do. There is a, you know, we talked about the amount of information that you want to give. Because preferably, if you can do it, you want to give specific information like, okay, yes, I was in fear for my life. I shot this. I had to shoot this person in self-defense. I had no other, you know, they had a weapon or the weapon's there. There's witnesses over there that witnessed everything. There's a camera, you know, very specific stuff. I tried to retreat. I tried to deploy pepper spray. I was not able to, but very simple. Like he ran through that stuff. You know, I'm not gonna expose everything. It's worth taking the class. You know, there's a very narrow set of discussions you want to have with the cops if you get involved in like a lethal force shooting. Like, you do want to say something, but you don't want to run your mouth. You want to let, you know, you want to call it in, and you want to be the one who's preferably making the plane if you can, and you want to point. Basically, the objective is you want to point. The cops are going to show up. They're going to want to investigate. You don't want to run your mouth all fucking night, but you want to actually give the cops enough to, it points them in direction of exonerating you or defending your account of events. So you do want to kind of point them in a direction of everything you did was legally and morally justified. And you're like, yes, I was in fear for my life. This person had a weapon. There's the weapon right there. You know, I tried to retreat. You know, very, very simple stuff. Very short, very quick. Take the class. You'll go over that stuff. And it was pretty good. We did some play acting like that too, where, you know, you started from being approached on the street to being accosted, and, you know, you could see someone, like, it was the whole thing, like, starting, like, someone's approaching you, see if you can try to avoid it. Sometimes you could avoid it, sometimes you couldn't. If you were engaged with this person, how you manage the unknown contact. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. If you have to, you can go to pepper spray, or sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you don't have time to do pepper spray, sometimes you go straight to the firearm. If you have to use a firearm and actually discharge it, this is how you do it. I mean, it was a very good, complete walkthrough from before the shooting incident to after it. You know, really, really great deal. I can't talk enough about it. Concealed Carry, Street Encounter Skills and Tactics from John Murphy at FPF Training. And so you're probably wondering why I'm talking about this. I mean, obviously, you probably know why. It was a great class, and I'm boosting it because John's a friend. He's also was a friend of Pat Rogers, who is someone who trained me for a lot of stuff. Really good friend of mine. Famous guy in the training industry. Passed away May 2016. I'm bringing this up, though, because it makes so much sense when I explain it. You know, you obviously want something between, you know, being able to scream at someone or yell at someone and having to shoot them. You know, you want something. Not every problem is a shooting problem. Well, that's so obvious at a self-defense level, but that also scales. That scales to politics, that scales to activism, that scales to society at large. And this is something that I feel like the right-leaning people in general don't have a good theory of power that contains that. And like, and there's a sense of, on the right, when you talk to people, and this is a big reason why I started doing this project in the first place, was trying to give people options that were more than just voting, more than, you know, voting's important, more than just voting. Like, it's important to get turnout for voting, it's important to vote, but how do you pressure people once you've been elected to office? How do you pressure people in ways that are not, you know, with the government? Like, how do you have a protest or a rally and do it safely in a controlled way where you don't get mobbed by lefties or you don't get flooded with infiltrators? I wanted to cover that sort of stuff. How do you research a local area and find out pressure points for activist groups to try to push your agenda? How do you do all the things the left seems to take for granted the right has no idea how to do or even doesn't even know exists? The same principle applies. You want something between voting and you want something between civil war. And the right has a big gap there. There's not a theory of power for that. And this is sort of the thing where I'm talking, like, I have to be very careful how I speak now because I take it for granted, but I talk to people and I'm like, well, you know, voting's great, but like voting, you know, there's more options than just voting. And they look at me and they kind of assume, like, they either give me a wink or they like start to like look a little weirded out because they think, like, their immediate thought is when I say, well, there's other options than voting, is they immediately think I'm talking about shooting. I'm like, wait, no, I'm not talking about civil war. I'm not talking about like violence. Okay. Like I covered in my Battle of Athens versus Battle of Blair Mountain episode, you know, violence is something, it's very risky. It's high risk, potentially high payoff, but it's potentially high cost. So the Battle of Athens worked. It worked because it was a very narrow set of circumstances and a very achievable objective, very achievable, limited, immediate objective. Battle of Blair Mountain did not work. It was a pretty significant defeat. It set them back like 20 years. And that was like 15,000 Americans with rifles that were decided to go fight the government, and it didn't work. I mean, it's a that's kind of what I'm pointing out. It's like, you need something between that, because if you win, you have like the Battle of Athens or the American Revolutionary War, you'll win, and you'll win a lot. But if you lose, you're like the Confederates in the Civil War, or you're like the miners at the Battle of Blair Mountain, who lose a lot. And so you don't want to do that. And it's just, that's something that's so self-evident when you talk about self-defense, because you're like, you don't want to shoot, like, I don't, you don't want to just shoot a homeless person when they threaten you. Like, or if they yell at you or threaten you and throw shit at you, you don't want to shoot them for that. You want other options that are not, shooting options. Like, okay, I can mace this dude. I can hit him with some pepper spray in the face, or I know how to avoid him. I know how to distract him. Yeah, I know how to spot this before it happens. You want those options, because if you don't have those options, you'll see this a lot. It's like people that either know how to like yell at someone, or don't even know how to do it reliably. People who don't know how to manage unknown contacts, or mucking as it's called. People who don't know how to muck and they only have some shooting skills, they're completely lost when they're faced with that sort of situation. If you're being accosted by a crazy homeless person, they don't, they either stand there doing nothing, or pull a gun, and which is a way w usually in that sort of situation is a massive escalation. And that's at an individual level. And I see that at the group, political and activist level on the right, is like there's a missing, there's no understanding of how to really push for change, other than like, let's go vote, or let's start a civil war. And the voting part is critical, like I said, but there's so much more to it than that. Having a lot of options to respond to a situation makes you less vulnerable too to targeted pressure campaigns and direct actions that your opponent can do against you. Last year, when I was undercover in Antifa, I wrote about it when I came back. One of the things I saw they were doing successfully against the Portland police was something called a dilemma action. And this is something bigger than just Portland. It's something lefties have been fairly good at for a while. Studying a target, figuring out what the target's capable of doing, and then applying pressure and doing an action in a certain specific way that kind of puts pressure right against one of those gaps. To like, what are the tactics that are going to be used against me? Well, here's where they don't have a corresponding tactic, or here's a space we can work. Let's create a tactic that fits right here, and they have to respond to us in a way that either forces them to back down because they don't have something appropriate, or they have to choose a tactic that is way over, way overkill, and it looks horrible and gives us a PR victory. That's something that, it's hard to explain to people. Some or I hope I explain it pretty decently, but it's something people have a little trouble grasping when you try to explain it to them in that sort of a context. But then when you talk about like self-defense, you're like, hey, you can't just shoot the crazy homeless guy throwing poop at you. How do you respond to that? Well, if you don't have pepper spray, you don't know how to use pepper spray, you don't know how to, use like verbal judo, you're in a tight spot. And that's sort of the same principle. Another, you have to have a set of nonviolent skills or self-defense skills. Using pepper spray or having pepper spray, knowing how to use it, knowing how to use your verbal judo and your managing unknown contact skills, knowing, keeping up a good situational awareness and spotting those pre-assault indicators so you cannot get in the situation where you are going to get robbed. And, that was another good thing that was covered in the class, Well, as you know, if you do wind up at gunpoint, how can you turn that situation to your advantage where you have the initiative and your opponent has, you know, they're at a disadvantage? And, you know, you can, it's actually sort of interesting how that works. It's like, you know, these things, they're rarely random. You know, I mean, they do rant, sometimes they randomly happen, but generally speaking, you know, a lot of these people, you know, they have, there are patterns that they use. And, you know, they have certain objectives that they wish to accomplish. And, you know, that those are things you can be aware of. And if you know what to look for, you can spot them and cut them off. But, yeah, you know, the whole thing really is you want to give yourself an array of skills that fall between, you know, persuasion to, like, lethal violence. Because, you know, if you can't respond to that adequately, that's kind of like if you're someone who is a really good shooter, but you don't know, you don't carry pepper spray, you don't even know how to use it, you're terrible at, like, your soft people skills, like, in terms of, like, you don't know how to spot, you know, pre-assault indicators or grooming cues or anything like that, you don't really, you're not good at, like, dealing with, you know, no hand-to-hand stuff at all. If you get in a situation where, you know, some emotionally disturbed homeless person is, like, not violently assaulting you, but maybe pushing you and be aggressive, are you going to shoot that person? I mean, well, maybe you will, but, you know, that probably won't work out well for you if it wasn't something that could be justifiably, you know, considered lethal force, especially if people saw it and it was like, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, just multiple reasons. If you handled it very badly, like, I'd rather, you know, I don't want to if it's not a lethal force situation, I don't want to use it. I'm glad I have a certain array of skills I can use to kind of keep me out of that situation or try to head it off before it gets there. But yeah, that's what a dilemma action really is. It's like, it's kind of that same principle of, like, you have a gap in your skill set and your opponent attacks you there and you can't respond to it. You either have a choice that is too weak to reply or overkill. That's basically what they were doing. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of those things. And it's really interesting. For a while, you know, I've talked on here, the right lacks a lot of these skills that the left has and uses to advance their agenda. But what's more of, like, the right actually has these skills, but they don't know that they have them, or they're in a different context. And it's less about teaching a lot of these skills than it is teaching righties to know where to look. Another example is mutual aid. There's a big deal in Texas. You know, Texas had the ice storm a week or so ago. It just wrecked it, you know. Lefties are down there now. They're raising a lot of money. They're doing something called mutual aid. And I talked about this for my Occupy Agenda stuff, like the Occupy Vacant Houses and Eviction Defenses. And they're occupying hotel rooms around the country, mainly in Pacific Northwest and on the East Coast, what they're now doing in Texas. So yeah, you know, those sorts of tactics, they're doing that sort of stuff, but they're also raising money and, like, giving out, you know, food and clothes and tents and just odds and ends that people need when there's been a massive natural disaster. Lefties have been doing that stuff for a long time. And in, even in different contexts, it's done in a very lefty fashion, and it's pretty explicitly political. But, you know, a big thing that works a lot in politics and activism is just be useful. As long as you're useful, people will let you get away with a lot of stuff, and they'll love you, and they'll support you the more useful you are. And it sounds like something like there's not something that righties do, but that's not really true. Another example of this, and, like, I don't think they're explicitly political, but I don't doubt that they probably skew right of the general population, is the Cajun Navy. The Cajun Navy is a great example of mutual aid. That's the whole thing where there's hurricanes that hit down in the South, and basically every adult male within 300 miles of the beach loads up a boat and heads to the affected area. And they start, you know, motoring around, rescuing people from houses and, you know, whatever else is needed. Lots of, you know, disaster support. That's a great example.
Oh, excuse me.
yawning. I'm fixing to go to bed. But that's a great example of mutual aid, and that's probably people who have, you know, they're probably not monolithically Republican or conservative, but they probably skew somewhat to the right, and no doubt there is a significant amount of conservative type people out there doing that exact same thing. So yes, right-wing people already do mutual aid, and they just don't think of it that way. And that's the important thing, is like learning to recognize the things that people already do that are very similar to the things lefties are doing. And lefties also do this thing where they're kind of weird and awkward, and they kind of have to make it artificial and explicit because they're just that way, because they're just weird. But yeah, you know, lefties give these things weird names, and that's part of the reason why it doesn't immediately click for right-wing people. Don't hang up so much on the names. Look at what they're doing and think, hey, is that something we can do, or is that something we're already kind of doing in a different context? You know, the whole theory of power thing I'm talking about, like the whole, this self-defense class that I took was about filling a response gap between, you know, saying mean things and shooting someone. That's something that's how the left operates politically, or in a political context, using their force and activism. Like, it's just a scaled up principle. You know, the right focuses on being a switch, which is, you know, do nothing or just vote or write a nasty letter to the editor and then flip the switch and then civil war. That's not really a very practical response, set of responses for 99.999% of the situations that you're going to be dealing with. So yeah, you got to have something like that. And I found, like, when I explained that to people in that context that are right-leaning, especially people in the self-defense community, that's when it clicks. It's like, hey, you can't just shoot everyone. Sometimes you got to pepper spray someone. Sometimes you got to use a little hand-to-hand stuff, not actually pull your gun. It's the same principle applies of, you know, a little bit more than just saying nasty things to someone, but not quite shooting someone. Having that moderate escalation response, the same principle scales up to politics and activism. And I feel kind of weird saying politics, because again, politics, when you say that word, people assume you're just talking about voting. And, you know, when you say just voting, people assume the other option again is shooting. And I'm like, no, I'm talking about neither one. And when I start with politics, I'm talking about, it's the system where we just shape the world in the vision we would like to see. It's the way that you kind of, you know, measure desires, the political electoral process, how you measure like relative motivation and strength and how people feel for what they want the world to look like, and they reach some sort of compromise with that, at least the idealized version of it. I couldn't sleep so soon, sorry. Yeah, you know, I hope that made some sense, and that's how we need to do this going forward, is like just start looking at the things you have in your life that you're wondering, like, you know, another example, one thing I hear a lot, you know, people talk about, well, we can't do this because right-wing people are individualists and, you know, lefties are collectivists. Well, I don't really buy that. I it doesn't make sense. I don't think, for starters, if it were true and right-wing people were absolutely, I mean, I get it in terms of individual rights and, you know, weighing that slightly differently. But the reality is, everyone knows, you know, maybe it's changing under Biden, but the military and law enforcement, those are collectivist entities that are about subordinating your individual well-being for a collective group well-being, and it's about achieving some cause for the community that's greater than someone's individual, you know, wishes or desires. That's fairly collectivist, you know. That's something, if I describe that to you out of context, you would think it's a leftist organization. Well, no, it's like everyone, you know, like I said, other than like before Biden, the military and law enforcement are both areas that have been disproportionately right-leaning. You know, those are things conservatives join the military more than liberals do. And so I don't really buy that the Republicans can't work together, conservatives can't work together because of individualism. It's just not true. You know, you have to have a cause, and you have to have something to believe in and a reasonable, like, you have to have something, you have to offer people a reasonable chance of success, and you have to have offered them a worthy cause. But conservatives are willing to, you know, it's not collectivism, it's teamwork, you know, and it's all about phraseology. It's like, you know, yeah, you can be an individual, but you can also believe in teamwork. And that's really what you have to approach it. It's a lot of this stuff, right-wingers already do it. It just has to flip the script a little bit, flip the context, and then it becomes immediately apparent that this skill set, this mindset, this way of looking things already exists. We just have to repurpose it. So I'm going to let you go with that, and I hope it gave you some food for thought. If you get a chance to take this class, you definitely need to. Concealed Carry, Street Encounter Skills and Tactics from FPF Training. You know, you can go to his FPF Training, that's Foxtrot, Papa Foxtrot, to, you know, FPF Training on, like, YouTube. He's got his videos and lecture series on there, and you can see the same stuff that we watched before we went to class, and it's pretty educational. Go check it out. If you get a chance, go to his website. It's absolutely worth taking. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on this stuff because I think it's really important, and it's a great illustration. It was a great way for me to segue from, you know, the things that we do at an individual, small level, and how they scale up to larger principles that apply, and just how we have to. And on the right, we have these things. We just need to start learning how to recognize them and repurpose them. So yeah, that's it. Y'all have a great night, and thanks for tuning in. I'll have another Substack newsletter out tomorrow. And sleep tight. Good night.